The headlines this hour. BP may cut payments to half of claimants hit by the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico as crude pours into the water for the 85th day. The top U.S. commander in Afghanistan associates insurgency with Islam. And Israel says its alliance with the U.S. is not faltering.
You're watching World News here on Press TV. We're coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran.
Thanks for joining us. BP has cut payments to most of those who filed claims for damage caused by the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. The British energy giant says some 40,000 of the nearly 100,000 claimants will not be paid. BP blames the cuts on paperwork problems in the claimants' applications for compensation. The move has angered Louisiana state officials. They say it's in contrast with BP's promises. Last month, the oil giant set up a multi-billion dollar account to pay damage claims to people hurt by the spill. More than 100 million gallons of oil have poured into the Gulf of Mexico since April. The leak has triggered the worst ecological disaster in U.S. history. Meanwhile, new data released by BP show more than one-fifth of the oil spill responders in the Gulf have been exposed to hazardous chemical.
Reports say the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan associates insurgency with Islam. General David Petraeus reportedly came out with a counterinsurgency manual in 2006 that refers to Islamic insurgents, Islamic extremists, and Islamic subversives. Now, report says it also details an alleged link between Muslim groups and terrorists. The manual was reportedly co-authored by General James Amos. Now, U.S. President Barack Obama has picked Amos as the next head of the Marine Corps. The manual's reported contents contradict a recent policy address by Obama's chief national security advisor for counterterrorism. John Brennan called on the U.S. to avoid using term Islamic terrorist. He says the use of such terms could cause America more problems in the long run.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Tel Aviv's alliance with Washington is not faltering. Netanyahu says his recent meeting with the U.S. president shows the alliance hasn't frayed. He describes his visit to Washington as positive and productive. Netanyahu says U.S. President Barack Obama's policy towards Israel is the same as his predecessor's. The Israeli premier refused to discuss what he called confidential aspects of the conversation. But he said the meeting mostly focused on Israel's security concerns.
Meanwhile, Israel has approved the construction of 32 new settler units in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds. The move is part of a plan to build a total of 250 settlement units in the Pisgat Ze'ev neighborhood. Israeli officials have also authorized more than 100 building permit requests all across Al-Quds. All Israeli settlements are considered illegal under international law. The Palestinian Authority wants a complete halt to settlement expansions before resuming peace talks. The Jerusalem Municipal Planning and Construction Committee has said that Israel will continue construction all over Al-Quds. This comes less than a week after Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu went to Washington for talks with U.S. President Barack Obama.
Well, Turkey has repeated its call for an Israeli apology after Tel Aviv's deadly attack on a Gaza Raid flotilla in late May. Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan says his country will continue to seek compensation for the victims of the incident.
This is an inhumane act. Simply, we can call it an act of piracy. That's why we expect and request an apology from Israel. We wish that compensation should be paid to the families of those killed. We also demand the lifting of Israel's blockade of Gaza. These are our demands, and we will stick to them until the end.
Well, Israel has said it will not apologize to Turkey for the attack, which has further soured ties between Tel Aviv and Ankara. Israel has also opposed a UN proposal for an international inquiry into the incident. Israel's own military probe says mistakes were made at all levels of command, from the top officers to commandos. It says more commandos should have been deployed in the attack on the 8th flotilla.
A Libyan ship carrying aid to Palestinians is heading to the besieged Gaza Strip in defiance of the Israeli threats. Gaddafi International Charity, that's organizing the trip, says that the ship will reach the coastal enclave by Wednesday. This despite Israel's many diplomatic attempts to divert it to Egypt. Tel Aviv has warned that the ship will be stopped and will not reach Gaza. The organization says on its website that the aid ship is carrying 2 tons of food and medicine. In May, Israeli commandos attacked a flotilla of almost a dozen ships carrying aid to Gaza in international waters. The deadly attack left around 9 activists dead and 50 more wounded. On other news, 6 months into Haiti's devastating earthquake, most of the displaced people are still in dire condition.
Well, the United Nations says at least 1.5 million Haitians are stuck in temporary camps.
The UN has warned that the humanitarian needs of the affected people remain immense. It has called the challenges facing the response operation potentially daunting. Cramped in tents, hundreds of thousands are living in filthy packed conditions. Latest data shows only less than 30,000 people have moved into new homes despite the millions of dollars of aid relief.
You look around today and you still see hundreds of thousands of people in tents, and their situation is going to become precarious as the rains start.
However, nobody believes conditions at the camps would improve in the short term.
But this time next year, I'm sure you will still see many, many people still living in camps. This is a process that's going to take many years.
People say they are disappointed about the pace of reconstruction. Many of them are worried they will stuck in tents for the rest of their lives.
We were expecting a change in our situation because they were speaking only about reconstruction. But the way things are going, we can wait for 5, 10 years, even for the rest of our lives, and see nothing happen.
The devastating 7-magnitude earthquake in March caused major damage to capital Port-au-Prince, almost flattened the city. It left more than 200,000 people dead and hundreds of thousands more homeless. Now 6 months after the quake, frustration is mounting among Haitians, as well as aid groups who say they are seeing haphazard progress towards recovery. This as two former US presidents joined President Barack Obama in the White House a few days after the earthquake to pledge America's support for rebuilding Haiti. But has Washington delivered on its promises?
Not much that has been promised has actually been done. And the basic problem was that people shouldn't have remained in camps. They should have been moved immediately to higher ground. A large portion of them, there should have been a large portion of them that were allowed to come to the United States. There were proposals at the time to use these former military posts that were closed under the BRAC legislation, where these people could have lived very comfortably and not subject to the elements as they are there in Haiti. That was not done. And if that is impossible, then somehow you've got to remove them from the areas in order to conduct the reconstruction. That's one of the problems. The other problem is that the money has not been allocated in sufficient quantities to really rebuild this country.
You're watching World News here on Press TV. Time for a quick reminder of the headlines this hour. BP may cut payments to half of claimants hit by the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico as crude pours into the water for the 85th day. The top U.S. commander in Afghanistan associates insurgency with Islam. And Israel says its alliance with the U.S. is not faltering.
Still to come here on Press TV, Tehran Stock Exchange witnesses one of its bullish days.
Ukrainian Foreign Minister Manuchar Mottaki has arrived in Spain. Mottaki will hold talks with his Spanish counterpart and other high-ranking officials during his two-day visit. The Iranian Foreign Minister has said he will discuss his country's nuclear energy program and the Tehran nuclear fuel swap declaration with Spanish officials. Earlier, Mottaki said Iran is preparing a response to the Vienna Group's request for fresh talks on its atomic program. Iran says Turkey and Brazil should take part in any upcoming nuclear negotiations.
Iran's stock market index has reached an all-time high. The Tehran Stock Exchange has kept pushing into positive territory. It's trading close to the 15,000 mark. TSE's all-share price index, TEPIX, has surged about 2,500 points since late March 2010. Analysts forecast the stock will break through the 15,000 barrier over the coming days. Iran's bourses are among those least affected by the global economic downturn.
A former British diplomat says the UK government intentionally exaggerated its assessment of Iraq's weapons capabilities before the US-led invasion back in 2003. Karn Ross told the Iraq War Inquiry that there was no significant intelligence backing up Britain's claim that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, or WMDs. Ross also stressed that there was no evidence that Iraq had significant stocks of weapons. The former diplomat added that the UK and the US did not believe Iraq's supposed WMD posed a substantial threat. Ross was first secretary responsible for the Middle East at Britain's UN mission from 1997 to 2002.
Well, Bulgaria, the EU's least transparent member state, celebrates 20 years of parliamentary democracy following decades of communist rule. But as Prestevi's Yalda Sadikova reports, the country is still not a full-fledged democracy.
A day of assessment. The European Union's most corrupt country, Bulgaria, observed 20 years of parliamentary rule on Monday, July 12. Since the collapse of its communist regime 20 years ago, Bulgaria has made big democratic strides and managed to remain peaceful, unlike some of its post-totalitarian neighbors. But still, the country faces serious democratic issues. Officials admit it's worrisome that no government has ever been formally blamed for anything by parliament. Other politicians point out that common people don't feel support from that institution.
Today, parliamentary democracy does not enjoy a high social rating. Parliament has one of the lowest ratings among public institutions. People rate the police and the army much higher.
While citizens may feel that parliament doesn't listen to them enough, lobbyists can't complain.
National Assembly is under the control of influential interests, and some of the laws adopted by the National Assembly are in favor of corporate interests and so on.
Recently, for example, Parliament relaxed a ban on public smoking. Many suspect that the tobacco companies influenced this vote. And there's another major problem with Bulgaria's parliamentary democracy. Institutions do not appear to cooperate.
The President of the Republic and the Prime Minister should meet regularly and discuss the issues confidentially. But traditionally we have always a public exchange of opinion, which leads very often to scandals, and it is not necessary.
Despite these issues, many seem to agree that parliamentary rule, rather than concentrating power in one person's hands, is still the best option for the country. This at a time when, as a new EU member, Bulgaria is under strong pressure from Brussels to make its institutions more transparent. Experts say that Bulgaria has to assess Parliament's performance more frequently, not just on anniversaries, in order to make sure that things are going well. Yilda Sarakova, Press TV, Sofia.
Well, a young Canadian held at the Guantanamo Bay prison camp says he will not defend himself.
23-year-old Omar Khader has refused a U.S. plea deal a week after firing his defense team. Khader says he no longer intends to participate in court proceedings. He insists that accepting any offer will give Washington an excuse for torturing and abusing him when he was a child. He made the comments before a military tribunal. U.S. forces in Afghanistan detained Khadr when he was just 15. He's been held at the Guantanamo Bay prison camp for the past 8 years. Khadr's trial is due to start next month. He's the only citizen of a Western country that's still held there. U.S. government figures show 181 detainees still remain jailed at Guantanamo. Dozens of them are being held without being charged or tried.
Well, the president of the World Football Governing Body, FIFA, has heaped praise on South Africa for the way it organized the World Cup. Sepp Blatter said the tournament was a success for all of Africa. But he did acknowledge that there were question marks about the quality of the football. Press of East Roshan Mohamed Saleh reports.
Over the past month, the World Cup has captivated the planet. South Africa's image has been transformed. Fans have embraced the tournament in unprecedented numbers, and the world has been introduced to the Vuvuzela. And the day after Spain were crowned world champions, FIFA president Sepp Blatter was keen to hail South Africa 2010 a resounding success.
I would also like to give a compliment to Africa as a continent, because Africa has proven that really they can organize this World Cup, they can organize a big competition, they can be proud, they can be proud. We in FIFA, we are satisfied. And I would say as a president, let me say, I'm a little bit happy as well.
Other FIFA dignitaries said the World Cup had succeeded in unifying South Africa as a nation. No matter what the ethnicity, all South Africans rallied round the national team, Bafana Bafana. And locals and tourists alike on the streets of Johannesburg praised the Rainbow Nation for the way the tournament was organized. However, many weren't that impressed by the quality of the football and called for rule changes to the game itself.
Well, there definitely needs to be rule changes, that's not even a question. But also I think that the players, for argument's sake, they've played long seasons in their respective leagues around the world and they're tired.
According to the other world championships, I think the level was quite low.
My first time that I enjoy a World Cup, and I like it so much. I love South Africa. I will come again. And for me, it was great. But the football, as my father said, the same. I expect a little more.
So the consensus is that off the pitch anyway, this World Cup has been a success. Foreign tourists have flocked to the country, the stadiums have been generally full, and the environment has been pretty safe. But on the pitch, this World Cup has undoubtedly been a disappointment. Many teams have been paralysed by fear, and that's led to some pretty awful games. So perhaps it's up to FIFA to change the rules of the game to encourage more attacking football. Roshan Mohamed Saleh, Press TV, Johannesburg.
Well, with that, we come to an end of world news here on Press TV.